Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, Charles Greenfield discusses an exciting season coming up for Seraphic Fire with their founder, conductor, and artistic director, Patrick Dupre Quigley. Film critic Dan Hudak previews the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival. Chef Norman Van Aken delivers a word on food, and our Florida Keys calendar features Andy Newman. With its mission to present live performances by innovative dance, music, and theater artists from around the world, support the development of new work by South Florida-based artists, and offer educational programs for students of all ages, Miami Light Project has become, in its 24 years, a principal mover and shaker in South Florida's multi-county arts environment. In fact, the organization has paved the way for South Florida's arts explosion. Reaching a diverse cross-section of communities, their extensive outreach effort has included partnerships with many other arts organizations, universities, and social service agencies. And with us today to tell us about their enticing new season of events is their artistic and executive director, Ms. Beth Boone. And Beth, great to have you back here on South Florida Arts Beat.
It's great to be here, Ed. Thank you for inviting me.
I would love to do a show just on your educational background, but since we only have a certain amount of time on the show today, tell me, after your college years and your experience in New York theater, it seems that opera might have called you. You relocated here to Miami in 1995, and what brought you here?
Sun and sunshine and warm weather.
And that's a great tan, I must say.
Well, thank you. I was tired of freezing in New York. Go back often, but I'm really glad to have put roots down here.
But you started working as a director of development at the Florida Grand Opera.
Yeah, well, associate director.
Yes, I did.
And moved on 2 years later to Miami-Dade College, working in their Department of Cultural Affairs. And then I became the director of Miami Light Project in 1998.
What did you bring to Miami from your arts administration experience that we didn't have down here?
Well, I think I added to things that were going on already and perhaps brought some new perspectives. But I had a particular interest right away in internationalizing our programs and in developing new work with Miami-based artists in particular. I really felt like at the time that we developed the Here and Now program, as it has become kind of our signature program at Miami Light Project, there were not a lot of programs, or perhaps none in existence, that were really focusing on commissioning and presenting new work by Miami-based artists, and then working on the professional development of those artists and helping them to take their work throughout the country and around the world to keep their work alive. I really feel like in order to have a vibrant arts community, we need to have a lot of vibrant artists who live here. And we do.
Well, no doubt you have helped the careers of hundreds of such artists. Let's talk about the great artists you have coming in for this season, the 13-14 season. Tiger Lilies, huh?
Okay, so the Tiger Lilies are not to be missed. We're opening our 24th contemporary performance series with them. They're described in all kinds of wonderful ways, but sort of anarchic,
and they're from
not
there,
anarchic. They're from London, anarchic Brechtian blues trio. They sing savage songs about drug addicts and losers and prostitutes, and it's very dark cabaret. It's just, they're really wonderful. We actually presented them 2 years ago during Sleepless Night at 2:30 in the morning on Miami Beach in the pouring rain. And that's a true story. And people, there were like 200 people there. I think there was a lot.
Well, in that vein, here's my wish list. Tom Waits, please. Tom Waits.
No, are you kidding me? We would love to have Tom Waits, but every time I've inquired, we're told, no, he doesn't.
I don't go to Florida.
We
continue on with, please pronounce her name for me, Nora.
Nora Chapalmery, who is a just extraordinary choreographer, dancer, thought leader. And we actually presented her 2 years ago at our space in Wynwood, the Lightbox. We presented her together with Miami-Dade College. And we are doing so again this year in January, presenting a piece called Miriam, which is her first character-based choreographic piece. And, you know, it sold out the last time.
Wow.
People really, really love this artist. She had danced formerly with Urban Bush Women. This is a piece about Miriam Makeba. And
ooh,
it has
great South African musician,
yes,
singer.
And it has original music by Cuban pianist Omar Sosa.
He's fantastic.
Yeah, so it's going to be a really beautiful piece in January.
Tiger Lilies, November 1st and 2nd at the Lightbox, their wonderful home, the marvelous facility for of Miami Light Project. Tiger Lilies, November 1st, 2nd. Nora Chipalmery, January 24th, 25th. February 7th and 8th, once again, the Global Cuba Fest, featuring a number of performers.
Yes, Global Cuba Fest is has come to be known as one of our strongest programs as well. We present it together with Fundarte. We started the program 6 years ago. It was launched actually in the Spiegel tent, for people who remember that great tent that was put up on Miami Beach, and then we did it for a number of years at the Bandshell. But we are moving all of our programs this year to our home in Wynwood at the Lightbox at Goldman Warehouse. So Global Cuba Fest has a new angle to it. It's happening in Wynwood, and this year we have an amazing lineup. We have Denai Suarez, who's a lovely singer, chanteuse, you know, just beautiful jazz, hip-hop, fusion of music, great vocalist. We have Yusa, whom
we opened up the segment with.
Yes, we did. Who's a singer, songwriter, and really is considered like a great representation of contemporary urban Cuba.
That's February 7th.
Yes. And then our headliner for Global Cuba Fest 2014 is MacArthur Genius Award winner Daphnis Prieto. He's a drummer. He's coming with his quartet. We presented him in our very first Global Cuba Fest back at the Spiegel Tent, and he's just a genius. He is truly a genius.
Daphnis appearing February 8th. And the Miami Light Project's Lightbox at Goldman Warehouse, located in the exciting Wynwood Arts District at 404 Northwest 26th Street. You can call them at 305-576-4350. Go to their website. So much information, MiamiLightProject.com. And we're racing to get through your marvelous season coming up. Thaddeus Phillips will be performing March 6th through the 8th. A
yes.
Brief description of him.
Well, 17 Border Crossings is the name of the piece that Thaddeus is doing. He's a rising, important theater figure in throughout the country. And this is a piece that he developed about his experiences of, traveling and crossing borders in sort of this modern day of travel restrictions.
It ain't easy.
Yes, it's a really beautiful theater piece, followed by Timur and the Dime Museum. It's this avant-garde pop vaudevillian musical group. They we're kind of referencing them as dark glam opera, punk opera, if you can imagine such a thing. Timur Bekbosunov is the founder. He's they're based in Los Angeles actually, but he's been profiled in LA Weekly as one of the best of in Los Angeles. We saw him at the Prototype Chamber Opera Festival in New York City last year, and just I thought it was a home run. So really excited about bringing him to South Florida.
That's April 18th and 19th, and of course you wrap up your year of magnificent productions with the Here and Now, May 8th and through the 17th. And unfortunately, Beth, we've run out of time. We also want to mention that you have great rental space available at the Lightbox.
Yes.
Office space, performance space, event party space. And it's a marvelous location you have there. You have so much to offer. And you want to work with other arts groups. So
we do.
For more info, go to MiamiLightProject.com or email them at info@MiamiLightProject.com. And we want to say thank you, Beth Boone, Artistic and Executive Director of the Miami Light Project and the Lightbox at Goldman Warehouse in Wynwood, for joining us today on South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you, Ed.
South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you.
Later on the program, Dan Hudak previews the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival. We'll feature Chef Norman Van Aken with A Word on Food and Andy Newman's Florida Keys calendar. It's a new schedule of choral masterpieces coming up for Seraphic Fire's 12th season. Here's Charles Greenfield with the details.
Founded in 2002, Seraphic Fire, South Florida's fully professional chamber choir, has emerged in the last decade as the region's leading provider of top-notch Renaissance, Baroque, and contemporary choral concerts. Their imaginative and innovative repertoire has included Monteverdi's Vespers of 1610, six motets by J.S. Bach, Scarlatti's Missa La Stella and Stabat Mater, and Handel's Messiah, one of the region's most popular Christmas events. The ensemble's repertoire and recording catalog spans over 1,000 years of sacred music, from Gregorian chant to newly commissioned works. Proof of their growing importance in the South Florida musical community was Seraphic Fire's exciting inclusion with Michael Tilson Thomas and the New World Symphony in the well-acclaimed Schubert Mass in E-flat. In 2007, armed with a $250,000 Knight Foundation grant to start a chamber orchestra, they created the Firebird Chamber Orchestra that debuted at the Arch Center's Knight Concert Hall in October 2008. Last year, the ensemble's recordings Brahms' Ein Deutscher Requiem and A Seraphic Fire Christmas were nominated for two 2012 Grammy Awards. Seraphic Fire was the only choir in North or South America to be nominated, and the only classical ensemble in the world to be nominated for two separate projects. Its latest album, Ave Maria, released August 27th, hit number 9 on Billboard's top classical chart, and achieved number 1 status on the Amazon Hot New Releases chart, and is digitally available on the ensemble's own Seraphic Fire media label, distributed in its physical format by Naxos of America. Seraphic Fire is also committed to educational outreach. The Miami Choral Academy, Seraphic Fire's education initiative, aims to change lives of children by offering after-school choral music instruction. The program currently serves 65 children from 9 Dade County public schools. Seraphic Fire launches their ambitious 2013-2014 season with 9 monthly concerts starting October 16th with the Renaissance and concluding May 11th with African American spirituals. Their always sold-out Handel's Messiah plays December 20th, 21st, and 22nd. The venues are Coral Gables First United Methodist Church, Miami Beach's All Souls Episcopal Church, Miami's St. Sophia Greek Orthodox Cathedral, Fort Lauderdale's All Saints Episcopal Church, and Boca Raton's St. Gregory's Episcopal Church. Recently, I had the opportunity to talk to Seraphic Fire's founding artistic director, Patrick Dupre Quigley, recipient of the 2004 Robert Shaw Conducting Fellowship and a graduate of Notre Dame and Yale School of Music, about Seraphic Fire and the 2013-2014 season. Patrick, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
Thanks for having me.
Patrick, besides the 2012 Grammy nominations you just released at the end of August, Ave Maria, with its Gregorian chants, it must be satisfying after a decade of hard work to be recognized both locally and nationally. Modesty aside, what are the critics hearing that makes the difference in the acclaim?
I think one of the things that people hear in this disc is the sheer amount of passion that the singers bring to this music, which, while religious, has incredibly passionate texts. And I think that you really feel that somewhat viscerally in this recording.
Gregorian chants, that's not too difficult for us down here.
No, I don't think so. It sort of speaks to much of the roots of all music. So.
Now, acoustics are essential to any choral group. Briefly, review your venues for us in terms of the sound atmosphere. I believe you have 2 new venues, one in Miami, one in Miami Beach.
Yes, we do have 2 new venues. The first new venue for our Wednesday nights is St. Sophia Greek Orthodox Cathedral, which is very similar to the acoustic at St. Jude, where we were before. Stone church, beautiful, reverberant acoustics. On Thursday, we were at St. Gregory's in Boca Raton. which has a very live and direct acoustic. On Friday, we're at the First United Methodist Church in Coral Gables, which has a certain warmth that the wooden ceilings lend to that really fantastic space. On Saturday nights, we are at All Saints Episcopal Church in Fort Lauderdale, right off Las Olas, which has a beautiful slate floor, which makes for some incredible sounds, especially for chant and polyphony. It's where we recorded our Ave Maria disc. And then we're finishing on Sundays in Miami Beach at a new venue, All Souls Episcopal Church, which is at 41st and Pine Tree. It, like All Saints, is a cruciform church. It has sort of a longer nave with a beautiful reverberant acoustic, which allows us to perform some of this music in a very welcoming atmosphere.
Now, Seraphic Fire launches their 12th season on October 12th with an invitation-only gala event featuring opera superstar Vivica Jeannot. Tell us a little bit about Madame or Mademoiselle Jeannot, her voice, repertoire in the event.
Miss Jeannot, she is really one of the preeminent coloratura mezzo-sopranos singing in the opera and concert world today. She really made her mark in the works of Vivaldi and in the works of perhaps the music that was written for Farinelli by Porpora and Rossi, but is also an incredible interpreter of the music of Rossini as well. The event is at the Rubel Gallery, really incredible, intimate space for this evening, and she'll be giving an hour-long concert to sort of open our 12th season in style.
Now, you start officially October 16th with the Renaissance music of the Sistine Chapel. We're in the world of polyphony, the Vatican, Palestrina. Put it together for us in terms of the music and atmosphere.
The Sistine Chapel really was one of the great vaults of music history during its heyday. Many singers like Dufay and Josquin either made their way through there as singers or their works were enshrined there. Much of the repertoire from those Flemish, French, and Spanish composers that we know so well really originated in this room with this international choir that was representative of all of Christianity at the time.
Now, the great Mozart Requiem was uncompleted, and you will present a new completion of the immortal work by composer Gregory Spears starting November 15th.
Yes.
Tell us about the collaboration between Seraphic Fire and the composer Spears, whose work the Boston Globe called beautifully unsettling music.
Greg has this incredible ability to write in a neoclassical, neo-Baroque style that really harkens back to the time of Mozart, but is unquestionably born of the 21st century, both in rhythm and in harmony. We endeavored together to create a work which would complement and not try to pretend to be the Mozart Requiem. I think which is probably the downfall of many of the completions is that they are pretentious in the true sense of the word and that they pretend to be Mozart, where we make no such pretensions in this completion, but rather seek to highlight, seek to complement.
What's the most difficult for you part of the Requiem?
Oh, I think the most difficult part of the Requiem is actually happens long before we ever sing a note. It's deciding really what to do with this masterpiece that is only half complete, deciding how Mozart actually would have intended, because we have only subtle clues as to what his true intentions were for the piece.
The Christmas holidays are celebrated twice, starting December 11th through the 15th, and of course, the Messiah, December 20th through the 22nd. You're going to be very busy and probably sold out.
Yes, very busy, almost sold out already. And we are excited this year to bring a harpist to play with us for our Christmas Carol program this year.
Now, the French Baroque, The Glories of Versailles, starts January 15th. And I wonder, Patrick, who was the Sun King listening to in the Palais de Versailles?
Oh, many different people, but certainly Lully and Charpentier and Rameau and Couperin and all of these folks whose buoyant, incredible music will be featured on this program.
February 14th through the 16th, you're bringing Bach lovers the wonderful Magnificat in D major and the Cantata 147. How are you going to tackle these works?
I think the way that we've tackled the B minor Mass and the St. John Passion before, this really is our bread and butter. It's what Seraphic Fire and the Firebird Orchestra do the absolute best.
The countertenor voice, arias for Farinelli, March 12th. Who is Mr. Farinelli?
Farinelli was really the original rock star of the music world. He was so absolutely revered in his time that he was given almost the status of a musical god. He was a castrato who was the muse of many a composer during the late Baroque and early classical period.
April 9th, start your Haydn dedication, the seven last words. What will we enjoy from the great Austrian composer who wrote The Creation?
The Seven Last Words is probably his most popular piece in Europe. We are combining the choral parts with his string quartet version, which is played by the great Chicago string quartet, the Spectral Quartet.
You conclude your series May 7th with Steal Away African American Spirituals.
Yes. Music that, in its truest sense, is the first truly American concert art form. The slave spiritual transformed into something for the stage, done by the Fisk Jubilee Singers in the 19th century, and later adopted as one of our great, great parts of our national heritage.
And finally, are there any surprises on the horizon? Concert tours, new CDs, guest artists?
We have a few things. We will be performing our Chicago debut with the Spectral Quartet. The week after, we're performing it in Miami. We'll be taking the Haydn Seven Last Words there. And we're also headlining the American Choral Directors Association Eastern Division Convention this year in Baltimore, reprising our performances of Claudio Monteverdi's Vespers, and then making our D.C. debut at that same time.
Very, very busy musical bees.
Indeed.
Thank you, Patrick, for joining us on South Florida Arts Beat.
My pleasure.
Seraphic Fire is no longer the brash young musical group making waves in South Florida. It has now become a force to reckon with locally and nationally with its iTunes and CD success. Artistic director Patrick Dupre Quigley has a bold vision for music making in the community and in cyberspace. With the Firebird Chamber Orchestra and a robust schedule, the ensemble is running on all cylinders. Seraphic Fire and the Firebird Chamber Orchestra can be contacted at 305-285-9060, their website, seraphicfire.org. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Charles Greenfield.
Charles Greenfield is a classical music contributor for the Sun Sentinel and has written for the Miami Herald. You can email him at cdgpm@bellsouth.net. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat continues in just a moment. You're listening to South Florida Arts Beat on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up, we'll feature Chef Norman Van Aken and our Florida Keys calendar. Now, our film critic Dan Hudak has a preview of the 28th annual Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival.
One of the best parts of having a world-renowned film festival right here in South Florida is the opportunity it provides to see high-profile releases well in advance of their regular opening. Last year, for example, the closing night film of the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival was Silver Linings Playbook, which went on to earn 8 Academy Award nominations, including eventual Best Actress winner Jennifer Lawrence. Which film will emerge this year? Well, the slate for the 28th edition of the festival, which begins October 18th and runs through November 11th, looks promising, highlighted by director John Wells' adaptation of the Pulitzer Prize-winning play August, Osage County, that stars Meryl Streep, Julia Roberts, Ewan McGregor, Chris Cooper, Abigail Breslin, Benedict Cumberbatch, and Juliette Lewis. The film follows an Oklahoma family centered around a pill-popping mother, played by Streep, who verbally abuses her daughters, one of whom is played by Roberts. Other notable highlights include Last Vegas, starring Academy Award winners Michael Douglas, Robert De Niro, Morgan Freeman, and Kevin Kline as childhood friends who relive their glory days when they throw a bachelor party in Las Vegas for Douglas's character, who was the last to get married. There's also Mandela, A Long Walk to Freedom, starring Idris Elba and based on South African President Nelson Mandela's autobiography. And there's Sideways, director Alexander Payne's adventure of a father and his estranged son traveling to claim a substantial prize in Nebraska. Flip opens and closes with two films based on true stories. The opening night film is Free Ride, which stars True Blood's Anna Paquin as a single mother of two who gets caught up in the Florida drug trade during the late 1970s. And the closing night film on November 10th is Walking with the Enemy, which follows a young man who's separated from his family during World War II and has to disguise himself as a Nazi SS officer to survive. We recently caught up with the president of the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival, Gregory von Hausch, to learn more about the films, special events, and happenings at this year's festival. Greg, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
Well, thanks. It's always a pleasure to be on.
I should start by congratulating you. We are opening location number 2 for Cinema Paradiso, this time in Hollywood. It's got to be a very exciting time.
It really is. Plus, being able to build a theater basically from scratch. I mean, the four walls were there, but we basically built the interior of it and had a pretty good idea of what we could do. It's going to be intimate, 82 seats, but films 7 days a week, you know, from 11 a.m. to midnight, so...
It seems like it has a rich, diverse history, which kind of complements the rich and diverse films that you're going to be showing there. So that it kind of works out.
Yeah, and also the crowd is reciprocating that. They're rich and diverse as well, very generous, and the people in Hollywood helping us out to build the theater, and they're so excited about it.
Speaking of excited, I looked at the lineup for this year's festival, and wow. Not that I don't get excited over the festival lineup every year, but you have some real high-profile releases. Last Vegas is coming, Mandela, Nebraska, Alexander Payne's latest film. He made Sideways and The Descendants. And then, of course, August Osage County, which has a slew of Oscar winners in it, not to mention all the independent, foreign, docs, short films, a whole bunch of great, great films coming. Talk about getting these more high-profile releases.
Well, we work a lot with the studios. The Weinstein Company's been good friends of ours. They're the ones that gave us The Artist and My Week with Marilyn and so many more of them. And they've been very happy with the amount of buzz we can create for each of their films. So every year they give us a little bit more, and we have a very good working relationship with them. Nebraska is through Paramount, and they're very excited to work with us. And I just love that film. It's just fabulous. Alexander Payne, I don't know, I just appreciate and enjoy his sense of humor so much. And this is going to be Bruce Dern's probably his greatest role ever, and he's really fabulous in it. And then the Last Vegas movie with, you know, Robert De Niro and Morgan Freeman and Kevin Kline and Michael Douglas, that's going to be fun, too. That's on our first Sunday, October 20th, and we're going to do a whole kind of Las Vegas thing in the courtyard before people go in. So we're able to generate a lot of different things around it, a lot of periphery around the films, and that's what the studio's like.
And you also, speaking of kind of partying in Vegas, sort of a party themed after The Great Gatsby on opening night. Do I have this correct?
Well, yeah, we have. Luckily for us, we have a very good sponsor in Fort Lauderdale. He has a 18,000 square foot mansion, and we've always thought of him. He's kind of an enigma in a way. No one knows a lot about him. His name's Steve Saver, and he's extremely generous to the film festival. And I always think of him sort of as the Great Gatsby. You know, there's a lot of, what's going on there? So he's hosting a party at his house, a 20s theme. You have to black tie or period dress. And it should be fun. His house is incredible. He did one for us last year, a closing night thing. He had mermaids in his pool. He had girls juggling fire. I mean, it's spectacular what he can do there. So, and the house itself is worth the admission.
Well, prior to the party on opening night, Anna Paquin is in town. It's the premiere of her film, Free Ride. Paquin will be here. Among others who are going to be here are Ed Asner and Anne Margaret. And Michael
and
Bolton,
Leah Thompson,
Michael Bolton will be in town. I mean, we have a good array of guests this year as well.
Right, and I know a lot. There's a lot of people out there that like that True Blood TV show. So Stephen Moyer, her husband, will be here as well.
Uh-huh.
And Cab Hunter, for the old time's sake. And you mentioned Ed Asner. And also Aphrodite Jones will be doing that. She wrote the book. She has that crime TV show that's on weekly. But she wrote the book All She Wanted, which was made into the film Boys Don't Cry.
Right.
And so she'll be here to introduce that screening and talk a little bit about from script to screen about that film.
We also have a local filmmaker, Joe Pisciotta, who has a short film called Human Nature that is screening at the festival. We have a number of shorts and a number of films in general from local filmmakers. Again, the emphasis on showcasing local people in addition to, you know, the more national and films from all around the world, right?
Absolutely. In fact, we have three local features. We've got Chrissy Bell by Alan Darnay, Run Stinky Run by Neil Golan, and The Last Hit by Mike Geyer. And they'll all have a party with their films, and all the filmmakers come. It's a fun time for the audience because everybody that made the film is there, and so it's very enjoyable.
That's great. Alan's actually a friend of mine, so I'm thrilled that his film was playing at the festival. The festival also encompasses Halloween and Veterans Day and always special activities during those days as well.
Right, and on Halloween, for the LGBT crowd, we have this stand-up comic, Ian Harvey. He has a film produced by Sandra Oh. It's called Ian Harvey Superhero, and Ian will be here to introduce it and talk with the audience afterwards. And then following that, our Splatterama boys take over with a double feature of some retro Halloween film. So that's all on Halloween right there. Then Veterans Day, which is the very, very last day, it's November 11th, which is a Monday, we're doing films for vets and active. If you're a veteran or active duty service, you and your immediate family get in free to see this film we have called Unclaimed. There's also two local shorts that go with it, and they all deal with people in the service. Unclaimed is about finding an MIA in Vietnam, and that one is just, not only is it interesting, it's also a mystery as to how it even happened. So that one's pretty cool. And playing opposite of that is our closing night film that we'll have encore screenings on that day called Walking with the Enemy. And that film, it's a true story, kind of Schindler's List, where after Hungary was taken over by the Nazis and all the Jews were underground, this guy kills a SS officer. And then he gets this idea. He keeps his uniform and saves Jews by, ordering the people to put down their guns, and I'll take these people. And he marches into a prison, and he frees this person one time. It's that you're on the edge. It's a really white-knuckle ride, and it's a fabulous film. Ben Kingsley's also in it. The two leads are just stunningly gorgeous, the man and the woman, and they're flying over from London for the premiere, and as is the composer, the director, producer, and the cinematographer, and another actress in the film. So we'll have quite a contingent for that one.
And it sounds like a great high note to end the festival on and keep people excited about it. Greg, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Sure, and I'm looking forward to Hudak on Hollywood doing a Q&A with our audience.
Can't wait. Always fun. Thank you.
Take care.
The Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival will be held October 18th through November 11th at venues throughout Fort Lauderdale, including the Cinema Paradiso locations in Fort Lauderdale and Hollywood, the Movie Co. Pompano in Pompano Beach, Bailey Hall on the Broward College campus in Davie, and the Sunrise Civic Center Theater in Sunrise. For more information, call 954-525-3456 or go to FLIFF.com. You can also get the free Fliff app at iTunes or Google Play. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Dan Hudak.
Chairman Emeritus of the Florida Film Critics Circle, Dan Hudak is a nationally syndicated film critic. You can visit him online at HudakOnHollywood.com. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue right after these messages. Welcome Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim fram sauce with the os and fay, with shafafa on the side. Shoot do de do ya do do.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to A Word on Food. Today's word on food is corn tortillas. A Mexican boy of 20 or so in long baggy shorts with a baseball hat is cooking my eggs while his mother rapidly peels potatoes with a curved blade, flicking the peels away from her into a bowl while she giggles at the conversation she's having with him. I can see them clearly through the kitchen that has almost no walls in this Mexican restaurant in Homestead. His sister is skinny, but with curves too. The light is better in this restaurant than the one we are used to going to, and the eggs are more properly cooked, with the yolks unbroken and sunny yellow. The beans carry the flavor of good lard. A tamale is a simple thing, oftentimes the blandest thing, but this one contains homemade braised and then crisped up pork. It delivers a firm kiss of texture, which differentiates it from the supple, smooth casing of the gentle corn mush. The skill with which the mother cuts those potatoes makes me feel confidence in this place overall, and that she is smiling while she does it, even though this is Sunday morning and probably her seventh day of work this week. After careful deliberation, I've decided that the best food of all in the house is the corn tortillas. The simplest things are almost always the best way to determine the quality of almost anything, certainly a restaurant. The tortillas smelled of corn. That sounds simplistic, but so many commercially made tortillas have dulled our expectations of homemade and handmade things, and these tortillas were clearly made by someone's own hands. I asked the young girl if they made the tortillas there. She said yes, and with her head, she pointed to the woman in the back and said, "She makes them. Gloria, my mother." Jose Coronel Urteco wrote in A Text on Corn that the tortilla is at one and the same time a plate, a meal, and spoon or scoop. It can be eaten by itself or can accompany other foods. It is the perfect everyday food. Tortillas morph into other words when they are used in different applications. The pupusas are one. They are a traditional Salvadoran dish made from slightly thicker corn tortillas, handmade, of course, and filled with variations on cheese, pork, or refried beans. Tostadas are another performance artist for the reliable tortillas. Here the tortillas act as an open-faced sandwich, although a tad trickier to eat than the simple taco. I love the variations of textures attainable when the tortilla is not almost shut. Flautas are pretty little cylindrically shaped examples of the way a tortilla can be used. Flautas translates as flutes, and the music they make will make you want to eat them in a cantina with a mariachi band. My wife, Janet, makes her own version of enchiladas. It brings a smile to my face to see how authentically she does them. You see, when she was 18, I took her to her first Mexican restaurant, and she was so insecure about the foreign-sounding food that she ordered a grilled cheese sandwich off the children's menu. Times have changed for Janet. I love the name of the one called gorditas, or little fatties. They are of pure Mexican birthright and are named, not so hard to guess why, because they are a bit overstuffed. Alas, at the moment, I am not. And all of this talk of such things has fueled an immense need to go out in search of, you guessed this as well, corn tortillas. I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
Norman Van Aken is the author of My Key West and is also the director of restaurants for the Miami Culinary Institute and Tuyo in downtown Miami. Please tune in tomorrow morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Souse. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat entertainment calendar. And today we welcome back Andy Newman of the Florida Keys and Key West Tourism Council. Andy, it's been too long, sir.
And it has been way too long, but it's always great to talk to you and to talk to the listeners.
Let's find out what's going on in the fabulous Florida Keys.
In the fabulous Florida Keys, Ed, I'll tell you something. We are chock-filled with activities. And let's go ahead and give it a start here. Number one, now through November 30th, the Key West Art and Historical Society is presenting Depicting Hemingway, Guy Harvey Sketches the Old Man and the Sea. And this is on exhibition at the Key West Custom House, located at 281 Front Street. Now, these are 59 original pen and ink drawings, and of course, they follow the storyline of Ernest Hemingway's famous novel, The Old Man and the Sea. Of course, Guy Harvey is one of the world's finest marine wildlife artists. Now, this weekend down in Key West, it is the Southernmost Marathon and Half Marathon. It's presented by Pat Croce's Rum Barrel. Gives you the opportunity either to run that 26.2-mile marathon or 13.1 miles. There's fabulous ocean and golf views, as well as the iconic Key West landmark. The full weekend of events includes the race on Saturday and a Sunday paddleboard race for the Special Olympics of Monroe County. Now, in Key Largo this weekend, Ed, the second annual Downtown Key Largo Songfest. There is a weekend music festival that will be including three live venues of more than a dozen entertainers playing simultaneously over two nights. And those venues include the Pilot House, Bayside Grill, and Sharky's Pub. In Isla Mirada, taking a look at next weekend, Thursday, October 17th, the Miradaway Arts and Cultural District presents the Third Thursday Art Walk. Showcases the fine arts, music, and culinary nuances of the Purple Isles. Of course, this is all between mile marker 81 and 82. All the galleries are open. There are artists. There are food vendors. It's just a great, great time. Thursday, October 17th, and every third Thursday of the month. And it is that time of the year in Key West. It is the 34th annual Fantasy Fest, October 18th to the 27th. It is an outrageous 10-day costuming and masking celebration. This year themed superheroes, villains, and beyond. And they feature flamboyant costume competitions, including one for pets, promenades, street fairs, and the Captain Morgan Fantasy Fest Parade on Saturday, October 26th. And this year's Grand Marshal is endurance swimmer Diana Nyad.
All right.
And you'll remember that in early September, Diana Nyad, on her fifth try, successfully completed a swim from Havana to Key West.
Bravo, gal.
Ed, and we're coming up on another annual ritual. It is the opening of the stone crab claw eating season.
Ooh.
Stone crab claw harvest season in the Florida Keys. You know, the Keys account for some 40% of all stone crab claws that are harvested in the state of Florida. They are a renewable resource. The fisherman takes legal-sized claws, returns the crab's body to the water, and they regenerate claws. Now, in celebration of the opening of the stone crab harvest season, on Saturday, October 19th, in Marathon, the third annual stone crab eating contest. This will be held at Keys Fisheries. You know something? How fast can you crack and cleanly consume 25 stone crab claws, Ed?
Yikes. I don't know. Give me a couple of days.
You know what? You can give me a couple of minutes. Anyway, you can either enter this contest either as an individual or a team competition. So, Ed, you and I can enter. I can be cracking, and you can be eating.
Ooh, I like that idea.
Anyway, great opportunity to eat some tasty stone crab claws, and also all the proceeds go to the Dolphin Research Center. Now, if you don't want to crack stone crab claws, maybe you want to carve pumpkins. It's Halloween, after all. And so on Saturday, October 19th, up in Key Largo, the annual underwater pumpkin carving contest offered up by the Amoray Dive Resort. And several prizes, such as dive trips, are awarded to the most creative jack-o'-lanterns that are carved underwater. And back down to Key West, at the Key West Burlesque on October 19th presents Hero. This burlesque musical is set to the greatest rock and roll songs of the 60s, 70s, and 80s, follows a young samurai warrior and a tea house temptress as they sing and dance their way to fame and fortune, until, of course, love gets in the way. I guess you just got to see the performance to really understand it, Ed. And back up to Key Largo, Ed, the October 25th Pilot House Pirate Bash celebrates the adventurous and carefree life of a pirate. It's a one-day bash with rum and grub specials, of course, located at the Pilot House Restaurant in Key Largo. Down to Key West, October 30th through November 3rd, it's time to celebrate Jimmy Buffett. It is the annual Parrothead in Paradise Meeting of the Minds Convention, and it's all highlighted by a Friday, November 1st Margaritaville Street Festival. Now, you know something, Ed? Once in a while, and we never know when, but sometimes Jimmy Buffett actually makes an appearance because his Coral Reefers band is there. Will he be there this year? I don't know. You just got to be there and find out. Back up to Key Largo, Ed. October 31st to November 1st, the Rocky Horror Show. Let's do the time warp again at the Murray E. Nelson Government and Cultural Center located at mile marker 102 Bayside. Fabulous production set here, and showtimes and tickets information are available on that Florida Keys website. It's flakeys.com, of course. And Ed, down the Overseas Highway, just a little bit to Isla Mirada, November 1 to the 3rd. The inaugural Art McKee Day celebrates the Keys treasure hunting heritage. The History of Diving Museum is presenting this celebration as part of a new Dive into History quarterly event series. It's a three-day commemoration. It'll include film screenings, reception parties, contests, special guests, children's activities, education opportunities, and so much more. There's a Saturday treasure hunt that's planned as well. I'll tell you something, what a great way to honor Art McKee, an important figure in Keys history, as well as a pioneer in the international field of shipwreck salvage and underwater archaeology. Much more information, Ed, on the Florida Keys website. It's flakeys.com.
Andy Newman of the Florida Keys and Key West Tourism Council always has fabulous information about the beautiful Florida Keys. Thank you, Andy, and great weekend.
And great weekend to you as well.
There will be two upcoming art exhibits in Miami to benefit the Center for Great Apes Sanctuary. November 9th at Pinecrest Gardens, December 5th at Miami Rum Club in Wynwood. For more information, go to centerforgreatapes.org or call 863-767-8903. And the free Soundscape Cinema Series continues at the Miami Beach Soundscape ExoStage on the corner of 17th Street and Washington Avenue on Miami Beach. They feature movies each week that begin at 8 o'clock. And coming up this Wednesday on October 16th, Les Miserables. And on the 23rd, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1. For more info, go to mbculture.com or call 305-673-7577. We'll rebroadcast South Florida Arts Beat tonight and every Friday night at 7 o'clock on our WLRN Extra HD channel. You can tune in on your HD radio or go to our new beautiful website at WLRN.org for more information. And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. Adrian Kennedy is our executive producer. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Paul Leary is our online producer. Special thanks to our technical director today, Andy Wagner. We'd also like to thank our great contributors, Charles Greenfield, Dan Hudak, Norman Van Aken, and Andy Newman. Please call us with your comments, 305-995-2258. You can fax us your event information to 305-995-2221 or email it to us at info@wlrn.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, Topical Currents with hosts Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, Monday at 1 o'clock. Have yourself a great weekend, and please, as always, keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye. Enjoy.